Happy Independence Day here from your good pals at ARG Presents. I'm your buddy, your chum, your personal friend, Amiga Aaron, joined by a man who stuck a feather in his cap and called it macaroni. I give you Yankee Doodle Brent.
I do like macaroni. And happy July 4th, wherever you are. Just, you know, just as a general date.
That's right. Can you celebrate just random dates? Is that cool?
Sure. You know what? August 13th. Let's just have a big party.
I prefer May 5th for some reason. I don't know
all
why.
Right. But we'll work it out. We'll work it out.
There you go. So, if you joined us last week, the Brent, we spun the wheel. We made the deal. We made a hateful deal, if I may say.
Well, the chat helped us make a hateful deal.
That's right. The chat made the choice last week, Brent. And it makes me wonder about the moral fiber of the chat, because they chose, bam, games parents hate. These are games that your parents don't want you playing, man. These are games that they wouldn't buy you if you had to buy them at the table. Like back in my day, parents didn't know one game from another. They'd buy you whatever you want if they had the bucks. Of course, in my day, there were no games to buy when I was younger, so it wasn't that big a deal. By the time
also,
the games were out,
to be
there,
fair, back when I played games, when I was a wee lad, there really wasn't a lot of bad stuff out there, general-wise.
Yeah.
It was all pretty middle of the road.
Yeah, things got real interesting in the 90s when it went south. So before we get the show going proper, I thought we would talk about games that parents hate, some stuff that we passed on, Brent. And what comes to mind when I ask you about games that the parents didn't like? What comes to mind for you in that category?
Well, obviously, the absolute first game that comes to mind is Mortal Kombat.
Mortal Kombat,
I mean,
absolutely.
That drummed up all that. That's what got us where we are here today. So,
yeah, I agree.
But you know, there's other things out there that people don't think about, like some of the Playboy pinballs were straight up nudity. So, I mean, and those were, I mean, they weren't on locations in, say, movie theaters or whatnot, but they were certainly in locations at certain arcades.
I'll tell you something. The Playboy had two big pinball machines. There was a classic machine that basically was just an artistic rendering of some hot chicks. I think Hef might have been on there. This is a pinball machine released, I believe, in the it was either the late 70s or early 80s.
Yeah, it was early 80s.
A very popular machine, but no great shakes, in my opinion. But
it was an average machine at best.
Then I think it was Stern that said, let's go to work. And they put out a Playboy pinball machine that was the bomb. It was awesome. I mean, it was a great... No,
please never
me.
Say it like that.
It was the bomb. It had everything you wanted in it. It played great. Okay,
yeah, it was a decent playing machine.
And oh, by the way, if you were particularly skilled at it, you got to see hot, hot Playboy nudity action. This was tremendous. I saw this thing on location at the Kentucky Arcade back when I lived in Lexington. And it was one of my go-to machines, and not just for the hot chick action, because it was actually fun. Fun machine, fun video mode, fun everything. It's an excellent choice. When I think of games that the parents didn't like, I'm going to go way back, and I saw someone mention this, Picard, in the chat. The old strip pokers. You know, I used to get those things illicitly, so I didn't have to have the parents involved. But strip poker, any way you could get some hot, hot chick action on the computer, that was always a good time. Those are the ones you had to kind of make sure the parents didn't come around, see what you were playing. Any of those old titillating nudity-based games. Another one that comes to mind, and these games became popular back in the day, was stuff like Schoolyard Massacre or Smurf Massacre. These real old, over-the-top violent games. They were sort of like the poor man's cheap Mortal Kombat. Just gratuitous violence and destruction.
Well,
those games were always unpopular with the folks.
Also mentioned in chat, Chiller, which
yes,
is an,
absolutely.
You know, 80% of that game, not so bad. And then one massive torture scene.
Yeah.
That we did an episode, I believe, on that.
Yeah,
didn't we,
Aaron? Did. We covered Chiller at some point. Yeah. And it's the thing is, Crossbow's a great game. Cheyenne's a great game. Same company. Chiller, you know, it was. It really just wasn't that good a game.
Well, yeah. I mean, it was what it was. But it took... the torture scenes in Chiller are incredibly brutal and graphic.
Yeah.
Like actual torture scenes where you are expected to carry out the tortures.
Yeah, yeah. It just a goofy game. But hey, they were going for a shock value and they got it, by God. Well then, let's talk about the Grand Theft Auto series, the Brent. Now the first couple of those, kind of the overhead versions, parents didn't care that much. But then things got real with the third one, where it got you're shooting hookers. You're getting drugs. You're doing all the crazy stuff. You're carjacking suckers.
You do all that in the first two as well. It's just not as graphically intense.
When games became, when you could see what actually was you were supposed to be seeing, as opposed to sort of kind of making it up in your head. And I'm jumping here from say Custard's Revenge to Narc, for example, which we're looking at here. That's when the real parental interference occurred, because they could actually tell what was going on.
Yeah.
And so you got a problem there. Can you think, it's not always graphical violence that incurred the parents' wrath. Occasionally it would be stuff like you're wrecking stuff. And I'm going to talk about stuff like stuff on the Wii is a good example where there's control involved that you could whack someone with. That sort of thing could get out of hand. I can see where the parents get mixed, something like that. Of course, we all know about the old Wii, where you're not wearing the handle and you can throw the thing through your television or whatnot. So I can see where that kind of get the parents irritated as well.
Well, from our own personal experience, the power pad for the NES.
Oh, God, yes, that was annoying. I can imagine.
You could run on it, sure, right? But that's slow and tired and no good. But if you got on your hands and knees and just pounded it like huge giant buttons, that got us in trouble a couple times. I remember distinctly getting in trouble for doing that because it was loud and brutal.
You know, L. Curtis Boyle mentioned something here, I had to laugh because I thought of an instance where this actually happened. X-rated text adventures. These were a thing, believe it or not, back in the day. And I distinctly remember coming across one of these on the Coco. And being interested, titillated to an extent, but I thought to myself, I got to be careful here because we had the Coca right there in the living room, and I remember the old man sitting in his rocking chair, in his old easy chair with the paper out, and here I am looking at XXX text on the Coca. You got to be careful when you do that sort of thing.
Even the BBS scene had stuff that was the door games
had
a lot of that kind of stuff.
Yeah, like pimp wars, drug wars, that sort of stuff. So, yeah, that's crazy to think about. All these are games that the parents would not go for. So, with that theme in mind, the Brent, it was our task to come up with a couple games that we knew the parents wouldn't dig, or we had evidence that they wouldn't dig. And I will let you lead the dance. And we really did go in two different directions this week, and I like them both. What did you come up with?
I went the more, not what's on screen, but what's happening in your living room. And I went with Donkey Konga. Of course, originally for the GameCube. Came out 2003 in Japan. Hit stateside and the rest of the world in 2004. And for those that aren't familiar, this was pre-Rock Band, pre-Guitar Hero, at least at home. They did have arcade ports of those games at the time, at least Rock Band. But this, you are to use a set of bongo controllers and play rhythm games with them. And it worked around a Donkey Kong theme, which is one reason why it became so incredibly popular at the time. And you had bongos. And the bongos themselves just worked as buttons. They didn't actually make a bongo-type noise when you hit them. But what they did do was produce enough of a thud to get the attention when you're slamming on these things over and over, as you're supposed to do. Plus, the game had a microphone in the middle of the bongos that the game would require you to clap. And sometimes it would have you clap just over and over and over. So it was an instant noise factory, right? And what makes this even better is, well, better for us, not so good for the poor folks trying to sleep in the next room, is you could actually have four bongo sets connected at the same time to the same system playing four-player Donkey Konga. And it was, we never had four sets when I was a kid. I never owned the game myself, actually. It was one that my friends owned at the time. We had two sets of bongos. And you can play this with a controller, but who's going to do that, right? So we had two sets of bongos sitting around the living room, and we would fire up some music. And the music is actually different depending on what region you're in. But here in the U.S., you have a few of your, like, children's melodies, you know, all that freeware, no copyright music. And then you had a few Nintendo songs, like DK Rap, probably the most popular song on the entire game.
Horrible.
But also from a non-licensed perspective. And then you had stuff like Louie Louie or On the Road Again from Willie Nelson. Or like, you know, Right Here, Right Now by Jesus Jones. Rock Lobster from the B-52s. Actual music, not played by the actual band, by the way. But actual music that you would just beat the heck out of the drums. And it had an interesting progression, right? Because, of course, some songs were harder than others. And when they were harder, it was more rhythm-based than it was anything else. But you could actually unlock more difficult versions of the songs where you would just continuously for 4 or 5 minutes pound on these drums, clap your hands, go completely nuts, and it was just a noise fest. Absolute noise fest. You know, if you were, which to do that, right? So now you're making all this noise with the drums and your hand clapping. So now you've got to crank the television up to 11 to try to hear the actual game. So it's absolute just blistering noise for 5 minutes at a time. The way Donkey Konga is played, for those who don't know, is you are given different symbols that scroll left to right on the screen, or actually right to left, left to right. What are those? And you either have a yellow symbol, which signifies hitting the left drum, a red symbol signifying hitting the right drum, a pink symbol symbolizing both drums, or a little starburst symbolizing a clap. Very simple gameplay. If you've ever played Rock Band or, you know, dozens of other rhythm games, you know exactly how it works. Except that they have sections which are just long bars of either one or one drum or the pink, which is both drums, in which you are just expected to pound the drums as quickly as possible, gaining more points the more you hit them. You wrap all this together, and then you put four drums going at the same time. Absolute lunacy. Aaron, did you ever play this back in the day when it was popular?
No, God, no. I'd heard of this thing, but I'd never played it. It's funny. I was telling Brent, I actually own the bongos for this, but I don't actually have this game. What I've got was would you call it the sequel to this game?
Oh, well, this game, Donkey Konga actually had two direct sequels, Donkey Konga 2, and in Japan, they got Donkey Konga 3, okay, which is just more rhythm games. They also released a game called Jungle Beat.
Yes,
which
that's the one I've got.
Yeah, that is actually like a platformer. It goes a completely different direction, and while you still beat on the drums and do the clapping and whatnot, it's not nearly as chaotic as Donkey Konga is. There's more, you have to be a lot more skillful. Now, you do jump on enemies and beat them down by repeatedly hitting the drums, so those sections are absolute noise fest. But for the most part, You're not hitting the drums nearly as often.
I can't imagine there were too many GameCube games released that supported the drums.
I think that's all of them. I think we just went over every one of
and
them.
I don't know what those drums cost at the time. I know you could get them packed with the first game, and I'm sure they had packs with the second game and the third game.
Well, you could buy them individually.
Yeah.
And I think it costs about the same as a controller would cost. And your first purchase came with the game and the controller, you know, both.
It's funny. Because like I said, I've got a pair of these. I was going to try to dig them up, but I've got no idea where I've stashed them because I didn't want to get rid of them. But this is, you know, this we talked about earlier before the show. We talked about how this falls in with Guitar Hero and Rock Band. And as you mentioned, this predates them. And they definitely, yeah. This is the formula that made that launched those ships. You know, there was, and I believe that this sort of gameplay was in the Japanese arcades before this game came
out.
Yeah,
absolutely. In fact, it was in the American arcades as well.
And so this came straight. And this, by the way, if you think Japanese wacky arcade game, this is right up there what comes to mind. Because you always see these wacky machines that, you know, from Japan. And I can see one with the big bongos built into it. You know, I had to rig this up to play it. So I didn't have the bongos to play with, but I did just use the keyboard to play it. And the thing about it is, it works. It's fun. When you've played something like a Rock Band, this is a lot more simplistic. In fact, if you look at it, you almost would think to yourself, this is such a simplistic game. It's barely something you could all... It's a game you could release, but you couldn't release a game like this now because there wouldn't be enough to it. You know, the fact that you can play four players is cool. That's a real neat angle. But the thought of having to pick up four sets of these bongos, this thing's probably... That'd cost you some bucks. I mean, you're going into that sort of, you're going into that land of where you're paying big money for a game that you might play occasionally, but and then you've got to store all those bongos. So I can't imagine having four sets of these sitting around. This probably also goes in. This is the first delving into the land of the plastic instruments that are filling up landfills and Goodwills all over the country. You know, now I don't think I've ever seen any of these. I picked mine up in some sort of deal, to be honest with you. I don't exactly remember where I got mine. But I don't ever remember seeing this particular controller at the Goodwill and stuff. I see tons of guitars and drums this day. You'll come across the Rock Band stuff, but not so much this. But this is an okay game. I mean, I was kind of surprised that the animations and stuff, they didn't do a whole lot with the... You know, they've got the Donkey Kong and his little buddies are sort of like the same guys that were in Donkey Kong Country, the kind of Ray Trace looking guys.
Correct. Yeah.
But they didn't really do much with those guys. I mean, there's not a whole lot going on. They could have done something with them. They dance around like idiots. They don't really, you know what I'm saying? Do you get where I'm coming from?
They mimic what you do. Like Donkey Kong mimics.
I'm not talking about Donkey Kong per se. I'm talking about the other goofs that just kind of linger around.
No, that, yeah. But you have to think when you're playing, you're concentrating on the scrolling aspect of the game.
Yeah.
So everything else is just filler for the audience.
Now, did you play a game? There was a Dreamcast game, and it predates this by quite a while, and it was called Samba de Amigo.
Yes.
Where you actually use maracas to play the game. Did you ever have a go with that?
I've never played it, but I do know of it, yeah.
Yeah, and so that's one that I actually pondered that one. It's funny we went that way. And Samba de Amigo, I did not have the maracas, but I played this like in a store. I played it somewhere back in the day, and it was pretty fun. I mean, again, it's sort of the same kind of gimmick. So even this that trumped this in terms of it, when it was released. But, you know, I like music games. The library in this is, it's wacky.
It's all over the map.
It is. You've got like, I think it's like this Queen song in there. they've got Wild Thing, bunch of crazy stuff. But this is something you could set your kid down in front of and just let him wail on the thing. But as a parent, this would, you know, at Christmas time, you know, when your kid gets Christmas gifts, I know your kid's a little bit older, but my kid, he would get, and so his aunts and stuff would get him these Christmas gifts, and the gifts would be stuff like, real loud laser guns that fire realistic sound effects and light up, or stuff where he has to, anything you get that's real loud and annoying, you look at that aunt like you want to kill them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's, so if I was going to give someone this game for Christmas, I could see where the parent would want to pound me with a hammer because this would absolutely drive you nuts. And the thought of four people playing these and you're in the next room trying to watch the ball game, that'd be bad times for the bongos, man. So, good.
From a game perspective, let's try to pull away from the annoying factor. Unfortunately, it falls very short. And the reason why is, at best, you have four elements, right? You have left drum, right drum, both drums, or clap. But in actual practice, you only have two. Because if you hit both drums when it's a left or a right, it picks up the correct beat and doesn't penalize you for hitting both.
Yeah, I read that. I never did that, but I read that you could do that.
Yeah, the second aspect of it is when you clap, there's an element of you taking, you know, you have to take both hands off the drum, clap your hands, and then ready back again. When in actuality, that's not necessary. You can tap the side of the bongo and it picks up as a clap. Yeah. And that is actually how we played. We never clapped once we found that out. We always just hit the side of the bongo. And it actually makes a more satisfying sound and doesn't brutalize your hands quite as much. But when you only have two elements, only the most challenging stages where the notes are just flying as fast as your eyes can track them, does the game hold any real challenge. And that's kind of unfortunate. You would have thought they would have been able to maybe put that in as like a kid's mode, but from an actual gaming perspective, it totally kills the challenge of the game. And very unfortunate at that.
Well, the one thing about this game that sort of separates it from like a Rock Band, because let's face it, me and you play a lot of Rock Band. In fact, I'm going to play Rock Band tonight. There'll be more Rock Band, okay? Yeah. I love Rock Band. I know you like it too. Love it. Rock Band, you're not so much playing for score. You just want to try to do your best, right? It's a personal challenge to play the song. And also, you don't want to look like a geek in front of your pals, although everyone playing that look like geeks by default. This game, you could sort of play for score. And if you had four people and you were actually trying to do a score battle, that'd be fun. But when you have the ability to cheat all the time, it pretty much screws up any bothering of the score.
Right.
Because everyone could just cheat. And no matter how good a player you are. And I think of our buddy Jamie, who's a real star player. If me and him both played this and I got a better score than him or even came close, that would be an abomination unto man, because I know he would be better at this than me.
Right.
And I would cheat to win because I want to look like a stud. You know, so I will say, having played Jungle Beat, I think that's a more fun, creative use of the drums, although it's sort of nonsensical. It's almost like they shoehorned the drums into a certain
degree.
They
did. Yeah. Absolutely. That was, I believe that was Nintendo saying, hey, you know, we've got these rhythm games. We sold everyone these, you know, plastic instruments. We need to do something else.
Yeah.
And that's what Jungle Beat is, what they did.
I read in the States that this is not a big seller. And I'm assuming it did better in Japan.
Well, it did okay. It did okay everywhere. Yeah. Nintendo considered it a success, and review scores were middle of the road, sevens and eights, pretty much across the board. And what you'll find is Nintendo does this with every console generation. They have some gimmick that's so outside the box that, you know, people are usually willing to take a chance on it. You got Rob the Robot from the Nintendo days, and that's true for pretty much all the console variations all the way up through. So, you know, for a gimmick, you know, if they would be putting these kind of gimmicks out once a year or something, I don't think people would tolerate it. But when you kind of pull back and you just have a gimmick once a console cycle, like right now that's got the Amiibos, that sort of thing, I think you can pull it off and not flood the market with it, and it's kind of accepted.
Did they ever come back to this concept? Like, hear me out here. I've got one of these, I've got a Nintendo DS, and they had made Rock Band for it, and they made this little attachment that had buttons on it. You could play Rock Band on your DS. Did they ever
Guitar
do
Hero.
Like that? Did they ever Guitar do something Hero. Like that with Donkey Kong? Yeah, it was Guitar Hero, yeah.
No, they didn't. Not that I'm aware of.
So they've
least.
Never came back to this one, eh?
I'm no, not surprised. I mean, and they never do. They have their concepts, they have their thing, and then they move on to the next new thing, you know. So I do salute Nintendo for trying to think outside the box. Although this is a Namco game, by the way.
Yeah.
Namco's the one that developed this, not Nintendo directly. But you know they had Nintendo's blessing, because you know, with the DK characters and all that good stuff. So I think you should run out and buy a set of bongos to play this? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. If you find a set of bongos and Donkey Konga at a yard sale for $10, pick it up. Pick it up for the novelty. And you'll get enough enjoyment out of it. You'll sit down, you'll play through all the songs a few times. You'll annoy whoever's in the next room, and then you can pass it down the line to, you know, maybe start somebody out on their retro gaming career, some of the youth of today. But as a game, no, it doesn't hold up, and it's certainly not worth emulating, because without the bongos, this is absolutely nothing.
It's not as fun. I will say, if you're at that yard sale and you pay the $10, just be prepared to store those drums indefinitely.
Yeah.
Because they're big, bulky, plastic,
oh,
heavy.
Oh, they're not
thing.
That big.
They're big enough to be. They're big enough to have to store. That's all yeah. I'm saying. Very good. Did you look this up? Do you know what the drums are going for right now? Can you get those things? Are they readily available?
If you could entertain the crowd for a moment, I will look them up.
I know that I've played with my drums exactly two times. In fact, I got those to play with the boy. He was uninterested. And then he just started playing them without the game. And that's when they had to go. They had to be immediately stowed after that. I would be interested to know what kind of games that the Japanese release has got as well, because I bet they had some pretty wacky songs. But I would wonder if they, you know, in Japan, there's a drumming tradition. There's a traditional yeah. form of music, and it would be kind of neat if they could have mixed some of that stuff in with the Donkey Kong like gameplay elements.
Well, they have that in the arcade, so yeah. I don't think they
that's,
would necessarily
yeah, that's
want
where
it
I've
as a
seen
home
that,
thing.
Yeah.
But you can pick these up anywhere from $20 to $30, depending on condition and if it comes with a game or not.
No kidding. Not
yeah,
well,
so
that's
pretty
not
cheap.
Bad. Well done, Brent. Nice work. Once you showed me what you were up to, I was like, I could perfectly see what he was talking about on that. An excellent choice. I went in a whole different direction, I'll have to say. I guess I went in a more conventional sense. Things you wouldn't want your parents to walk in while you were playing, or things that you would try to talk your mom into buying you, and she'd be like, are you kidding me? So I went in the more conventional way. I jumped on Splatterhouse, Brent.
Yes.
Splatterhouse. And this week, I looked at Splatterhouse on the TurboGrafx-16, the American version, and we'll get to some of the differences. So, Splatterhouse, and it's funny, I was talking to Brent about this, and I didn't even know this. I knew this had an arcade release, but for some reason, I thought it was one of those games that came after the home release. But it was not. Actually, Splatterhouse came out in the arcade in 88 and made its way to the home consoles in 90. Now, here's something that's kind of funny. This game was developed by the same company that developed Donkey Kong, Namco Limited. So what are the odds of that, Brent, that both our games were developed by Namco Limited? Now, Namco Limited had a huge horizon of games that they put together, but these are two games that are completely from different genres, totally different in every way.
Oh,
these
almost
two
the exact same game.
Oh,
you just
yeah.
copied me.
You are hitting stuff. I guess that's sort of the same. So this was released, and again, I'm going to look at the TurboGrafx version, but this got released for the TurboGrafx and the PC Engine. There are differences out of the PC Engine version in Japan. Eventually, this came out in a lot of stuff, but at first it didn't come out in that much. It was just those two, plus the FM Towns, our old friend, the FM Towns. Nowadays, you can play Splatterhouse pretty much anywhere you want. It's on some of the museum collections, PSP, Vita, Wii, you know, Windows. This also had one of the initial releases. This was also for the PC, which I was kind of surprised to see. Again, this was released in 1990. What you're doing in this game, this is an unusual game. It's a game that I heard about for years and years, but it's one I didn't really give much of the time of day until this week. So this game starts out, this is the backstory, mind you. There are two students at a local college, Rick Taylor and Jennifer Willis. What you talking about, Willis? And you're both parapsychology majors, if you can believe that. So this is a reputable school that they're going to. And they decide to go and spend the night, conduct some experiments in Dr. West's mansion. Now, Dr. West, for the uninitiated or the people that are into horror, if you have ever read the H.P. Lovecraft story, or even seen the movie called The Reanimator, this was West was the name of the guy who was the reanimator. He'd bring corpses back to life. And this game does a lot of borrowing from various horror sources. So Rick and Jennifer are supposed to investigate the mansion. As they enter the mansion, the door shuts, Jennifer screams, and she's gone. And Rick wakes up, And he's got to take care of business trying to get her. Now, Rick did not look like a big steroided up Jason Voorhees when he walked into the mansion, but that's because he wasn't wearing the terror mask, all right? Now, the mask he's wearing in the American version of this is sort of purple, all right? In the Japanese release, it's white, like a hockey mask. Well, they didn't want to get sued, okay? Now, according to the docs, this is supposed to be a Mayan, a sort of tribal mask, but we all know what it is. You look like Jason Voorhees from the Friday 13th movies, and you play effectively. This is the one thing about the game that I never understood, but now that I read the backstory, it gives me some structure for what the heck's going on. Because I always wonder why one evil, hideous creature was going through and wailing on all these other hideous, evil creatures when it seems like they should all get along. So, but this is why. Once that Rick puts on this tribal mask, he gains the power of a big, mindless serial killer, and he gets to slaughter all these other guys. So
I just want to stop you real quick.
No, yeah.
If you don't know the lore, because the game itself doesn't present this lore.
No,
in this
it
way.
Doesn't.
It looks just like the opening a scene from Rocky Horror. When you've got a guy and a girl running into a big,
yes,
weird mansion while it's raining.
Yes. There's a light over at the Frankenstein place, if you know what I mean. if Rick starts singing in his mask, now that's my kind of game. Anyway, so once you get into this house, you realize, again, this is mostly from the backstory, that the house is alive. You know, if you ever seen the movie House, the series of movies where the house is alive, I guess that's sort of the same gimmick. You've got to make your way through 7 violent levels, ultra-violent levels, to rescue Willis before she is killed, or God knows what. Who knows what happens to her. So this is really, underneath all that baloney, okay, this is sort of your classic beat-em-up game, okay? You run through and you wail on stuff, okay? Occasionally, you'll come across a weapon. There aren't a ton of weapons in this. There's basically a board or stick, you know, like Hacksaw Duggan. Oh! You'll come across a wrench, which I thought an interesting
like
choice.
Twice, by
yeah.
the way.
There's a shotgun. There's also a spear, you know, in here. And so you can
meat
use
cleaver.
I forgot about the golden cleaver. Thank you. And so you, as you go through this, you can just pick these up, and it makes it easier for you to wail on the weird crap that's coming to get you. A lot of the stuff in this game is like, a fetus-y or slimy, wormy, sort of humanoid type stuff.
Geiger. Very Geiger.
Actually reminds me more like, well, I mean, yeah, sort of, but it's to me, it's more like a Lovecraftian type stuff. But anyway, it goes. There's lots of embryos and stuff. Real weird. Now, you think it's weird to start off, but this game, at the end of every level, you've got your end bosses, right? Now, I've got to say, this game, well, I won't say one thing. When it comes to the end bosses, they didn't phone it in. They've got some bizarre end bosses. So, the first end boss you fight, you go up this ladder, and you appear in this room. In the room is what I can only describe as it's a guy hanging from the ceiling, and there's a room full of leeches or gunk and stuff.
No, they're like intestine worms.
That's right. They look like worms, or almost like shrimp. And you have to, like with teeth, and you have to jump around and kill these. Now, that one thing the game does do is it's a jump scare after you slaughter all these little worms. And by the way, I should mention your attacks. Your Jason Voorhees-style character, Rick, he can do stuff like he's amazingly nimble for a roided-up killer. He's got jump kicks. He's got like a slide he can do, slide kick, and he can do punches. And he clears a good chunk of the screen when he's doing his jump kick. That's for sure. So anyway, once you get past the leech guy, my personal favorite room is the room on the second floor. And this is what I just call the crazy room of death.
Yeah, this is the best part of the game.
This is probably an homage to, say, Evil Dead, where the room is attacking you. And at first, the chair in the room attacks you. And then these knives come off the wall and start attacking you. And the whole time, the room's like shaking and going crazy. There's a picture of an eyeball on the wall. He's bouncing because the room's crazy.
And well, it's cursed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Once you
it's possessed.
Once you kill off all the knives that are coming at you, you just punch them, by the way. Then the picture comes at you. You got to kill that. I actually thought this was pretty, I did say this is my favorite part of the game right here. This crazy room. And it really is horrific. I mean, the way they present it. And then after it's all said and done, your guy just gets out of the way and the chandelier and flops right in the middle of the room. That's great. By the way, this is the last impulse I could personally get to.
Yeah.
This is as far as I could get. So, on the, and I should say these stages are mostly in the house, but some of them take place like in the sewer, or and there, and level three takes place, like, I guess you're out in the courtyard of the house or the back of the mansion. Who knows? It could be one of those crazy houses where a door opens and it's outdoors. This level finds you getting the shotgun, and then you come up against a guy who has a, this guy, he's got a bag on his head. Okay, he's a huge guy. He's got a bag tied around his head, and his arms have been replaced with double chainsaws. Okay, so I call this guy Double Chainsaw Baghead in my notes, and I think that's an appropriate name for him. Double Chainsaw Baghead is just a big freak. You shoot with the gun, and once you run out of bullets, you sort of kick him. I didn't get this far, so I don't know how tough he is, but I watched video of it. He's very stupid looking. I will
there's
say
a
that.
Trick to the there's a trick to Baghead.
Yeah,
you can actually, in the level are two shotguns. And one is right before the boss. Like it's on the same screen as the boss.
Yeah,
and the other one you can pick up at the beginning of the level and just don't use it. Use your jump kicks or avoid enemies.
Right,
so that you'll have two guns when you get there.
Yeah,
10 shots, boss dead. It's the easiest boss in the game if you can make it there without using off all your other shotgun.
And I was disappointed because I almost got to him before I used up all my continues. I wasn't great at this game, but we'll talk about the control here in a second. So the next level, you're fighting your way, you're back in the house, and then you get to this. Now this level, Brent, and this is one of the places where there's a difference in the American version and the overseas version. Once you get past the very slow spinning blade floor traps, you arrive in what's like a mirror room. In the mirror room, you look in the mirrors and you see yourself, but you know what's going to happen, right? Here comes the fake you. But in this room, there's like about six fake yous that come out that you've got to fight. I noticed that it didn't look like, at least from the video I watched, that the fake yous were that difficult to defeat. But still,
no, they're not bad.
This is kind of a neat gimmick, the old mirror room, you know. And then once you get past the mirror room, you're into the chapel, okay? And this is all the same level here. And this is where you fight the... Well, I can only say it would be the... I called this the severed head fight, where there are these five or six rotating heads around a central head that you've got to use the golden cleaver to kill. And eventually, once you hit them enough times, they die. Now, in the Japanese version of this, the central head of this head circle is an upside down cross, one of those gimmicks, Brent. They got rid of that in the old USA version. So that
well,
one
you know where
see.
The Japanese got that from, right?
I don't know.
That's
no idea.
The arcade version is the upside down
cross. Oh, yeah.
And you're fighting through a chapel.
I thought you meant where'd they get it from. Yeah. I got what you're saying. This, I will say, this level ends on an upbeat note where the lights come up. I was waiting for something horrible to happen here, and nothing did. I was surprised.
Well, so, in the arcade version, he doesn't just kind of walk to the end of the room. Yeah. He actually walks up to an altar.
Yeah.
So
yeah, they got rid of
difference
that too.
There too.
Yeah, they don't need that. You gotta have your religious stuff in there. So then now, this is another weird one right here. Okay, so the next stage, again, more walking through the house, and you're again, it's pretty much rinse and repeat. This is the first time in the game you get to a choice where you could go two different directions. And once you get to the end of this level, you fight what I've got written out here as the fake girlfriend. I think she's fake, or she's possessed.
No, I think she's possessed.
It's one of the two. So I guess that's Jennifer. And she is morphs into what I can only describe as a killer teddy bear.
Yes. A Wolverine teddy bear.
Yeah. And if you watch, this is actually pretty graphic where she turns into this thing. This is sort of, you go into your Werewolf in London style transition there, and then you fight this killer teddy bear. Now, I was not sure if that was her or the, because in between attacks, she'll morph back into the woman and she'll be like, help me. She says something. And then she morphs into the teddy bear again. So, yeah. So I didn't read. You're saying that this is the real Jennifer and she's killed?
My understanding is that this is the real Jennifer.
Yeah, well, this is a pretty good scene, actually. Because it's amazing. Jennifer looks real cute and sweet, and you feel bad for her. But the giant teddy bear has this big, huge, toothy maul. He's yucking it up. You know, he's got claws. He's pretty nasty. It's funny, when you finally defeat the guy, he morphs back into the woman. You hold her in your arms for 4 seconds, but then she disappears.
So she does, yeah.
Yeah, you feel bad for the large, roided-up, serial killer masked guy for a split second. Pretty weird. So now you're in the home stretch here, Brent, and you're into the, this is what I can only describe as, you're into the large body of something.
This is very Geiger.
Yeah, absolutely. This is a level where you're actually going through, it looks like a body
intestines
tissue or like a vein or something. Yeah. And you're fighting like gut stuff. That's, you know, like, I don't know. And this results in you fighting this big fleshy pillar. Let's go with that.
Tumor.
And
you're it looks attacked, like a tumor.
You're attacked by clear, slimy fetuses. Let's go with that. And you just keep punching this thing until you get past it. This was what I would call the strangest level in the game. The weird body level. That jumps you out. This is a transition. You go from the body level to this level where you're outside, the whole place is on fire, and you're jumping over flaming logs while you avoid flaming guys. And fire.
I believe what they're trying to say here is, when you destroyed the big fleshy thing,
yeah,
that brought, you know, that was the central evil.
Yeah.
And now everything's just falling apart.
Very good. I like your interpretations of this stuff, Brent. It's almost like you were on the writing staff. So this is when it goes down. Now I read what happened here at the end of this game. So at the end of the game, basically, some souls or something come out of you, and it destroys a gravestone, and that unleashes the ultimate killer, who basically controls the whole level. I call this the Tombstone Kill Giant Freak Baby Fight level. I think
it's not a baby at all. It's a big giant fleshy head.
He looks, when his head pops out, he sort of looks like a weird baby.
I don't agree with that.
Well, whatever, man. Anyway, you punch this guy in the face and avoid his huge, weird hands. He's like the Grither, if you're familiar with that particular episode of Monsters. I doubt few people are, but that's what that reminded me of. Once you take this guy out, you basically see that the West Mansion's on fire and the game ends. And Docs, I guess, presumably say you get away. Okay, now, this game was followed up by several sequels, so clearly the evil was not vanquished forever, the Brent.
Well, if you watch the very end of the credits, because your character basically is freed of the mask at this point.
Uh-huh.
It shatters. But at the very end of the credits, the mask reforms.
Well, I watched the end of these credits and nothing happened.
Yeah, so, all the way at the end.
No, I did watch. I watched all the way to this video cut out. I didn't see Jack Squat, but I read that happened.
Yeah, well, maybe it's just the arcade version.
It says the terror mask reassembles itself, and there you go. So what's the takeaway from this game that's ultra-violent, gory, I mean, for its day, with a bunch of weird fetuses and whatnot? Well, the takeaway is Namco took a beat-down concept of the beat-em-up, and they just spiced it up with a bunch of real weird horror-based garbage. Now, do I think this is a great game? I don't. I don't think it's great. I know people love it, and I'm sure when you're a kid, this feels like you're playing something you're not supposed to, and that makes it a big deal. But as an adult, I felt like I was playing something dumb that looked dumb. But I know some people love this game, and I haven't played any of the sequels, and I didn't hate it.
I think that's harsh.
I didn't hate it. I didn't hate the game. I mean, it looks okay. I did have a turn on the arcade. I mean, it's a pretty good rendition of the arcade. I will say, from what I read, the FM Towns version is like almost pixel perfect to the arcade. It was the one that they did like a top shelf job. But I sure as heck wasn't going to try to emulate the FM Towns again. I'm not that dedicated. But I mean, I think this is an okay game. I don't think it's any great shakes. Is it better than, say, something like a Final Fight or something? No way. But I mean, it's not the worst beat 'em up I've ever played. The end bosses elevate this to an exciting new level, right? The music in this, that's good timing. The music in this is good. The graphics are pretty good. They're gross when they need to be gross. You didn't like the graphics?
No, the music's garbage. No, the music and sound effects are garbage.
I thought the music was okay. No. Nah, you're being too harsh.
No, I don't think it's very good.
No, it's not bad. I mean, it's better than I would expect. I thought it was okay. I mean, I'll give it credit. The originality of the concept lifts this thing above, its overall performance. I thought it was okay. What did you think of this one, Brent? Now, you've had more than a cup of coffee with this over the years.
Yes, I've played this to completion several times.
Oh, there you go.
The arcade version, not the TurboGrafx.
Okay.
There's a few things that you have to really respect about the game. They very rarely reuse mob types. When you go to a different area, you're fighting different things. Now, you might fight the same thing 30 times in a level, but there's good variety. The boss variety is off the charts good. The room where you're actually fighting the room is just fantastically done. It takes all the horror elements of a possessed room, of the room shaking, the things falling off the wall, the setup before you even start fighting is magnificent. Those type of things are ideal for this type of game. You have to put your best foot into your graphics and to your originality, and they did it, and they did a really good job with it. Where they kind of flub up is the hit detection is not good, but it's not good in your favor. When you punch something, your hitbox for your fist goes above your head and down to like your waist.
Yeah, I will say I'm glad you brought that up because I didn't mention it. You can gleefully run through these scumbags. The hardest parts to me were like the stuff where you had to avoid stuff more than anything else. The actual fighting of the guys, they sort of just slumber forward and you just kill them. The stuff where the guys get lowered down and they shoot crap out of them, that was kind of tough too. But the actual enemies, you're right, they're not too bad. They're not too difficult to dispatch.
Right. And the biggest problem with the game, outside of the sound, which I'll go ahead and comment on real quick, I think the sound in this game is just horrible. I think they go for this eerie kind of mood in their music and their sound effects, and I think it just comes off as cheesy.
I thought it kind of worked. And really, cheesy is not a bad thing.
It is, because the game is trying to take itself seriously.
Is
the
it?
Game, yes.
You fought Baghead, double chainsaw Baghead?
No, the game is 100% trying to take itself seriously. It wants to be a scary game. It wants to be a homage to horror films and Geiger and that type of thing. It takes itself very seriously in that regard. It doesn't try to make a B movie of it. And I think it does a good job, but I think the sound effects, they're so screechy. I just don't like them. But where the game falls apart is the hit detection makes the game easy in some places and downright impossible in other places. You get a lot of cheap hits. Enemies are obviously designed to come from behind at the absolute worst times, and that's fine. I mean, that's what gives the game its difficulty. But the hit detection, not good. There's a lot of swooping and flying enemies when you don't really have a upwards attack. Now, you have a jump kick, which your foot has as much hitbox as your hand does, so you can take care of a lot of enemies by jumping and kicking into them. The slide kick is kind of gimmicky. It's not really practical for most things, but they don't give you a whole lot of
it's kind of hard to get off, too. Enemies. I had trouble getting
it. Yeah, it can be. It can be.
I thought maybe it's because I didn't have the actual controller from the PC Engine, because I actually put this in the Mister. You know,
but the level variety in this is off the charts. It is off the charts.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of walking through the house, but they do mix it up
nicely. No, but every part of the house is different. Like, you could go into the sewer part, or you can go up into the attic, which is more of like a like an art gallery type of affair.
Yeah, it reminded me of like Night Gallery. That's where I thought. Yeah,
there's libraries. There's the mirror room, the chapel. Out, you go outside on two occasions. All of that is really good. I definitely think you should play this game if you've never played it. Play the arcade version. There's no reason to downgrade to a console version when the arcade version is arcade perfect because it's the arcade.
Yeah,
I agree also, with you, you don't get the censorship that you would from some of the versions. I've got a big problem with censorship, especially when it's censorship like this, where they're just taking out the religious elements to not hurt someone's feelings. I don't think that's necessary for a game like this. If you're playing this, you're not going to have hurt feelings anyway.
It's funny that you can slaughter, kill, maim. There's baby feasting, but I mean, God forbid that the chapel's misrepresented. Or there's like, it is funny. That's the double standard of religion. But I understand it.
That's always been true throughout North American gaming.
Yeah, so you're right.
You kind of have to accept that.
And I will say the arcade version. That's the one to play.
So I do recommend playing this game. Emulate it. Obviously, don't go out and buy a Splatterhouse machine unless that's really your thing. I personally didn't like 2 and 3. I think they were just kind of redoing the same thing again. But I think Splatterhouse, great game to pull out at Halloween. Run through it. I mean, when you've got the arcade, you really can't lose. Although, when you die, you go back to the beginning of the level. So, if you can't get through a level, you won't be able to beat the game.
Yeah.
But with enough practice, the game is short enough. You can get through it in about 20 minutes, 25 minutes.
Yeah.
Give it a play.
Yeah, it's not. There's a little bit of housekeeping just before we take it to the house on Splatterhouse. This game allegedly was the first game that had like a parent's warning on the front or a warning. But the warning's kind of funny if you read it. It basically says, the horrifying theme of this game may be inappropriate for young children and cowards. I love that. I mean, come on, you got to give them that. That's pretty funny. This was a surprise. I didn't know this either, the brand, until I looked into it. This game did well in Japan. According to Game Machine, which is the Japanese sort of the arcade manufacturer's guide over there, according to this, in December of 88, this was listed as the sixth most popular game at the time. So at least at some point it sold well somewhere. I can say I never saw this in any arcade in America. Did you ever see it anywhere?
No, I didn't either.
I never.
But, I mean, it got two sequels, so that's, I mean, you know it did well.
Did it get, those were arcade sequels?
Well, it had sequels. That's right. What matters.
Yeah. I looked up.
There's also a cutesy Nintendo version. I think it's Nintendo.
Yeah. It's like a knockoff. Yeah, it's like a parody. There's also, I looked up some reviews on the TurboGrafx version of this, because there were lots of them. 1UP gave this 84 out of 100. EGM, back in August of 90, gave this 32 out of 40. Not bad. Retro, it gave it 8 out of 10. Video Game Den, 4 out of 5 stars. You can see the trend here. A lot of these reviews were going for between 70 and 80%, which, you know, I'd say that's okay. That's not bad.
I think that's fair.
Yeah, I'd say that's okay. The parody Brent was mentioning is called Splatterhouse Wan Paku Graffiti. So if you're interested in looking at that, why, for whatever reason. Now get this, I did check this out on eBay, and I thought this might go for a few bucks, and by God, I was right. If you want just the hue card for your TurboGrafx, that's going to set you back all day $50. $50 for the hue card. If you want the hue card with the hard case, you're going into the $75 to $90 area. If you want complete in box, that's the hue card, the case, and the box. A lot of people don't even realize that most of these TurboGrafx games came in a box. They weren't just the cover. That's going to set you back somewhere. At the minimum, I saw it going for was $155, and I saw one of these sell, and it sold for this, mind you, $499 for complete in box version of Splatterhouse.
Yeah, it's a very popular game.
So yeah, you're gonna pay big time for this one. But yeah, I can see where parents would be disgusted by this, because if I walked over and I saw my kid playing this, I would be a little worried. And there were some parent groups that were, this is one of the games that was amongst the ones listed that gave trouble to people like the SRB and whatnot. And definitely not one to have your kids play. So there you go, Brent. We're going to shut the door on this one. An interesting topic. Thank you for the chat for coming up with this one. And now, Brent, it's time to move down the line. I think you know what it's time for. Let's kick it up. It's the wheel. All right. This week, our retro rewind piece, the Vic 20. We had a lot of fun with the Vic, Brent. We did it that one time. And our new piece here, listen to this one, to Brent. Different ports, same system. This was actually suggested by Jocko 6502, who's in the chat. So we might get you up right here, pal. Brent, you have a preference on this wheel tonight?
Something easy.
Something easy.
I mean, this week was easy too.
Here we go. The patented wheel noise. And the winner is... Okay, the winner, suggested by Rob Flacco Hera, Brit. Superhero games.
Oh, okay.
Superhero games. These will be games that feature, a superhero. Now, do you want to set any ground rules for this? You got to leave it wide open this week, the Brent.
Open. Now. I think superhero is pretty easily defined. I already know what I'm playing, so
yeah. Well,
super easy.
You can't pick superheroes. We've already covered it, so you're off.
No, nope. I know exactly what I'm playing.
All right,
easy week. Easy
very,
week.
Very good. Well, good, good. All right, listen. We've got a little bit of housekeeping to take care of. First, the most important thing. As we record this, this is July 4th, 2021. We usually record every Sunday live, but for one special week, Brent, we're going to be recording on Friday. That's right, folks. We'll be recording ARG Presents Live Friday, the 9th of July, and that will be directly after the Amigos, Everything Amiga podcast, because the Brent will be filling in for John, Boat of Car Schaller, for 1 week only. Next week, Brent, you're going to take the boat seat, and we're going to be doing a double bill next Friday. You can catch the entire event starting at 4:30 Eastern Standard Time. We'll start kicking it off, and we'll start the show proper at around 5 o'clock for the Amigos Everything Amiga podcast, and then we will seamlessly transition into ARG Presents, where we'll be covering superhero games, as suggested by Rob Flacco here. What do you think about taking the boat seat? It's been a while since you were on the show, hadn't it?
It is. It's been a little while, but I'm always eager to look at a good Amiga game or whatever we're playing this week.
Yeah, absolutely. It should be a lot of fun. And it's funny, this week on Amigos, Everything Amiga podcast, I suggested the game we're playing, which is called Fly Harder. And it's funny because Boat said, congratulations, your suggestion got through. I'm like, great, what is it? He goes, Fly Harder. And I looked at him because I couldn't remember it. So this was a game I played on stream one time, and I heard it was great. So we're going to play it. Although people are canning it already. Someone in the chat's already canned it. Mitsuyama, give it a break. Come on, it's going to be great. So anyway, again, to reiterate, that's Friday. We will be doing a double bill Friday the 9th of July, starting at 4:30, around 4:30 to 5 p.m., myself and the Brent will be doing Amigos, and we will then be doing ARG Presents, so it should be a good time. Next on the docket, Brent, the time draws near, my friend. July 24th, 2021 will be when it goes down. It's Amigathon 2021. Join such luminaries as Amiga Bill, Acid High, Dan Ravi, Kim Justice, Tenmark, Control Art Reese, we'll be all converging for Amigathon 2021, 12 big hours of hot Amiga action where you can donate a few bucks to the Children's Miracle Network, Brent. Easy as pie. You can start donating right now at amigathon.com. Please get your donation in today or whenever, and all money goes directly to the children at the Children Miracle Network.
Yeah, I'll make sure they don't get to touch it, guys. Yeah. Straight to the charity.
Yeah, we don't touch it. I don't want to get involved in that. Now wait, it gets better. Because myself, you, the boat, we're going to be, and all the people I mentioned, we're going to be running the show for 12 hours there. And then things get wild. Because for the next 12 hours of Amigathon, from 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time to 8 a.m., some of the best streamers around are going to take the helm and do 12 more hours of hot streaming action. So far, signed on, we have Rob Flacco-Hara. We have Stevie Strove from Coco Talk will be doing an hour. We've got Mr. Cola has just signed on this week to do some to put in some time. We've also got David Z from the Wild World Retro, and also just signed on this week. Those guys are crazy. They're insane. It's the Team Speaker regulars are going to run an hour of Amigathon. That's going to be interesting. In fact, I might crash the party and get in on some of that myself. That should be a lot of fun. So this will be a great time. 12 hours of our local streamers that are going to get some in, all to raise money for Children's Miracle Network. Again, that date, July 24th, 2021. We'll begin the action noon UTC. That's 8 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. And you can catch it all on twitch.tv/AmigosRetroGaming. So anyway, that should be a lot of fun. And we will have more in the coming days and weeks. So, Brent, anything you need to say before we take this to the house?
New supporter video going after the show. Aaron, we are up to 28 supporters. Hey. And I want to thank each and every one of them for their generosity. It really helps keep us going here. And the money is going, as it almost always does. I will admit, sometimes I will splurge and buy myself a burger or six, but that money is going right back into the show to get some equipment to do some outside stuff that I'm looking really forward to, and I hope everyone enjoys.
Let's take it to the house, Brent. Another fun week. Thanks everybody for joining us. Thanks everybody in chat. We had a big crowd today, and we will catch you guys again on Friday. Until then, annoy your parents.
Thanks for joining us today. Hello to all of our YouTube subscribers and Twitch followers. Duncan Styles, thank you for your vector graphics. Barkbick, thank you for your amazing music. Would you like to help keep ARG spinning for as little as a dollar a month? You can do so at patreon.com/ARGpresents, just like these fantastic folks. Paco6502, Kevin Bean, Super Tech Boy, David Terrence, Mr. B, C9K9, Jerry Dennington, John Fickman, Retroalgae, Andy Jones, Dave Velociraptor, Andy Craig, Rob Flack O'Hara, Jason Warnes, Mitsuyama, Chris Fools, Bernhard Lucas, Steve Rasmussen, Frodo NL, The Slow Norris, John Schaller, Kerry Heather, Terry Howard, Anthony Jarvis, Olaf Hope, Rolo, Roshi, and Graham, W. Ovechki. They all have access to our Discord channel, their names called out in the credits, and early access to special videos. And you could too. Don't want to explain another credit card bill? That's okay too. You can help us out by leaving us a positive review on Spotify or Apple iTunes. We record live every Sunday, 10 a.m. EDT on Twitch. Hope to see you there.